Okay, now I'll dig in the world. There goes the microphone. How do you like that? Fell right on my face. Okay. A little disheveled. Okay. This is broadcast number 621. It is October 31st. It's not November tomorrow. November. It's October the 31st, 1983. And this is Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove. Last week, the broadcast went so fast that, what is going on here? One minute. We got to get some, hello. We don't want dead air time here. We want to get the sound up, okay? I'm going to stop for 1 second and put this tape back because it isn't working right. And when I get home, then I have to do the whole hour over. So we'll carry over about 2 more minutes here and let it start over because I don't want to do it over. For 2 or 3 minutes, I can save an hour when I get home. That's fair, huh? How about that? Let's see if it works this time. Now, yeah, that's it. This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 621, and it's October the 31st, and it's 1983. Last week, I was in such a hurry that I forgot to keep you updated on what is happening, what happened last year, a year ago this week. So we'll cover the 2 weeks really quickly. A year ago, last week, November 25th, I was talking about the drug arrests and William French Smith breaking open the Operation Swordfish, releasing these people and not having the responsibility for them being arrested sufficiently. He wasn't sufficiently criticized. They did talk about in the Washington Post, the San Jose Mercury Attorney General criticized for the tip-off, the Operation TikTok, and so forth. A year ago, this week, the drug program is a total failure. I don't know what they expected from Ronald Reagan or Paul Exalt on the drug problem. A year ago, 20th Century Fox stories were breaking in the news. I was talking about the alleged suicide of Norman Gary and the problems, the economic problems of Mark Rich and Henry Kissinger making profits over the oil crisis that Mark Rich was involved with. That Mark Rich story has been pushed out of the news just a year later with the Lebanon bombing and with the invasion of Grenada. Everything's kind of quieted. They'll get back to it, but it's been quieted down. I did a profile of Pete Wilson. I call him the Medfly Senator. His blessings of C. Arnold Smith with his political career in the San Diego Union. Ken Reitz, part of Nixon's Kitty Corps. That's the fellow that I said was so miserable in Los Angeles talking the anti-Soviet talk. Father worked for Standard Oil and how Henry Kissinger, Gerald Ford, and Carlton Heston were campaigning for him. He's a very conservative man, but he also has links to the crime syndicate as well, through the C. Arnold Smith and the San Diego gang. And he's also close, I understand, DeLorean asked him where to locate his factories. That there's a whole nest of people down there that never have been cleaned out down in San Diego. They're similar to the gang down in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, sort of on the edge of water and ships going down to Mexico and these various islands. Just a year ago, November the 1st, a year ago this week or tonight, John Dean was saying Alexander Haig was Deep Throat. I wouldn't put it past him because after Deep Throat got Richard Nixon out of office, Henry Kissinger and Haig moved up. There's never been a word about this. Haig's been quiet. I talked about the Oroville shooting the Nazi, the friend of I'm looking at the Charles Manson case because that has been quieted down. The person who did the murder of Hoover, Joseph Hoover, was locked up. But the links to Charles Manson and the equipment that Manson had to leave the jail was never properly exposed by the Oroville shooting down there and the plans for him to go to the property when Manson got out of prison. Also, the Tylenol case, I talked about James Lewis, a year ago, he was just found guilty this week of extortion. But the heavy, Roger Arnold, hasn't been brought in for anything. I was talking about Roger Arnold, his trip, his ticket, his one-way ticket for two to Thailand, Hong Kong, and China and so forth that were in his pocket, 2 one-way tickets. His information on cyanide and his possession of cyanide, Roger Arnold is a heavy suspect along with James Lewis, and they're protecting him. So Kevin Mulcahy was murdered, the primary witness to the Edwin Wilson story, really one of the main ones, because he broke the story 5 years ago and kept wanting Wilson, Turpel, and Corkula locked up. And then he was murdered right after Roberta Calvi was murdered in June. And there were a whole string of murders related to the Edwin Wilson case, and they've been quieted ever since. Now, for 2 weeks, Congress, every member of Congress with Larry Flynt got tapes of the broadcast. I didn't hear from one single member of Congress until today, and William Proxmire sent the tape back. He said, "Dear Ms. Brussel, I've received your correspondence dated October the 10th, along with the cassette you enclosed. Unfortunately, I have in my office neither the facilities nor the staff resources to listen to or transcribe tapes which are sent to me. I'm therefore returning your correspondence. Please be advised for the future that these limitations on my office resources make it impossible for me to respond to views that are sent on tape recordings." He has secretaries and gets almost $1 million a year back there. So what we'll do is just send him a transcript of the tape. Charles Spears has them transcribed every week for people in the news media and serious researchers. So we'll just provide for Mr. Proxmire a copy of the tape. In the meanwhile, the other 539 members of Congress have not responded one way or the other. I don't have too much to say about the invasion of Grenada. The whole thing is sickening. I believe that Reagan planned it for a long time. I'm suspicious of that medical school down there. And there was a picture in the paper today that symbolized to me what Grenada means. It's an Army Ranger up at Fort Lewis, Washington, hugging his wife, Stephanie, when he returns from Grenada. And both of them are black, and she's so happy. He has done the job. Here's Mr. Bishop was murdered. They've come in, the American troops, with the C-130s, and they've taken over the island, rounded up all the Cubans. And here's a black man. A black man in America has very few choices of how to earn a living. They need the army. That keeps them employed. And then they're the first ones to die or be killed in the various jungles around the world. He needs a job. He's out there on Grenada chasing out poor people who want to change their lifestyle so that white racist societies can take over the island. The Robert Vescos, the kind of people that wanted Dominica Island so they could go chasing black people, unleash them and chase them like animals. The black people get the privilege of the drugs and narcotics in the ghettos. They're the last to get houses, to get jobs, to get education and health plan. Why is this man so proud of what he did? That's like the Jews rounding up other Jews to put them in concentration camps. They are so pitiful because instead of standing up and saying, "I will not wage this war to oppress another group of people who want to have the same standard of living I have, by hook or by crook," he is back from this great invasion, and he's so happy to be back. A few remarks about the 007, the Korean airline, which I haven't done recently. I mentioned a few weeks ago that there's a lawsuit in New York City, written in the New York Times, a woman whose husband was killed on the plane. That's Betty Lim. You may remember the broadcast. Betty Lim, the widow of scientist Dr. Jong Jin Lim, Yong Jin Lim. Well, there's a story that came out in the newspaper this week. While the Reagan administration continues to charge that the Soviet Union has full responsibility for the South Korean airline, there's a $1 billion claim for damages that it was filed with the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, opening up new doors to the United States' role in the tragic event on September the 1st. It's filed by Aaron Broder, B-R-O-D-E-R, and I might have mentioned his name before. It was filed in New York City, September 23rd. In the U.S. District Court in Manhattan, based upon the grounds that the airline deliberately entered Soviet airspace with the knowledge of the U.S. government. Now, what's new about this story is that this particular law firm is the law firm of F. Lee Bailey, who usually represents the federal government, but is representing a widow who is suing the federal government. This lawsuit says they were directly over the most sensitive area of the Soviet defense network at a place where most interested in, it suggests, a deliberate, willful plan to gather intelligence. And they quoted the Los Angeles Herald, September the 4th. It said Moscow may have tolerated other overflights of the airspace, but because they were engaging in sensitive material, they did not overlook this one. The claim for personal injury and wrongful death was filed by Broder's client. He's from the law firm of F. Lee Bailey. He's the attorney who won the largest airline negligence case in U.S. history, $7 million against McDonnell Douglas, for the DC-10 out of Chicago in 1979 at O'Hare Airport. The arrangement of unanswered questions that fit together, this article says, about the lawsuit regarding the plane being shot down arouses suspicion about the fated 007. That's the one with Larry McDonald. How did the plane find itself for 2.5 hours over this territory, they asked. This isn't new, but this is part of the lawsuit. If some miraculous thing happened that it went over this course, which is absolutely impossible, why didn't Japan or Alaska or the RC-135 that was within range of communication alert this plane that was not only off its course, but that was being tracked down by the Soviet interceptor fighter plane? As this tale and events unfold, the status of this plane appears. It makes people more suspicious. It suggests, said Broder of the F. Lee Bailey office, that Ronald Reagan administration knows a great deal more about the United States involvement. The president is anxious to turn away from the catastrophe. There are links between the CIA and the airline, Broder said. Our CIA worked very intimately with the KCIA from Korea. Our CIA was given tremendous impetus by the Reagan administration for an aggressive foreign policy to get as much information as was possible. And remember, there's Larry McDonald on the plane alone. General Keegan, a retired chief of the U.S. Air Force Intelligence Unit, said there may have been more than a score of infringements of Soviet airspace up till now, but this flight was very important. The repeated nature of bruising Soviet airspace suggests that the current airlines working with our government had violated this airspace, which was exclusively sovereignty of the Soviet Union. And Article 36 of the law of the Soviet Union and the state border provides for the use of weapons and combat equipment when the violation cannot be stopped by other means. So the law firm is going into the question of the federal aviation. They have filed in a federal court, and if the federal court rejects it, they'll go into another federal district court. So the law firm of F. Lee Bailey is after the federal government of foreknowledge representing a client on that matter. Now, a lot of people have asked about Larry Flynt and what's going on in Los Angeles with his tapes. Larry, there's a story, Jack Anderson, in the paper today about John DeLorean and the conversation on the tapes. It said the reason the crucial conversations in early stages were not recorded, they don't know why they weren't recorded. The government has a claim that DeLorean initiated the narcotics, but can't be proven. So the first point that Jack Anderson brings out is who brought up the early stages. Now, I might say that I'm not sympathetic to who, if he's holding it, he could run home. The second point is that he had threats against his family. It's my personal opinion that if he has threats against the family, he ought to call the law enforcement and say who's threatening them and give them their names, and he would have found out that they were federal agents. Jack Anderson says that there's no conclusive evidence that DeLorean initiated it. I don't know the law that well, but I believe that if somebody brings me a stolen car and I buy it and that person is dealing in stolen cars, I'm responsible for that which that is received by me. Now, these tapes leave some areas out about there's a technicality about the word godsend, whether the drugs were a godsend when he got it or whether he's referring to saving his own company. But the problem here is, I believe, is that I don't have much sympathy. You know, what goes on in Los Angeles is that's Larry Flynt's own business. I've only known him a short while. And he asked me, what did I think about buying the DeLorean tapes? And I personally, I wouldn't mess around with DeLorean at any rate. He had a meeting with Greg Boutzer. Greg Boutzer helped form TCI, which is the corporation that Otto von Bolschwing set up, which was the Nazi Galen operation, and Greg Boutzer is trouble anywhere you go. So I wouldn't meet with Greg Boutzer at any time or day or any of those people. I personally wouldn't. And DeLorean, you remember a while back how the goon squad that he used, Roy Nezeth, if you got involved with him, a fellow that worked for John DeLorean by the name of Dick Brown, worked for John DeLorean, and he said that he wouldn't get involved with DeLorean Motor Company. He came from one of the larger motor companies, unless they got Roy Nezeth off, he said, take the mob off as vice president, or I won't be involved. So DeLorean said that he'd keep Nezeth away, and a little while later, 6 months later, Nezeth was with him. And Nezeth started showing up at the Irvin Ranch offices and used Brown's secretary and went on these mysterious trips. And at one point, when Brown didn't want to mess with Nesbitt, he got a phone call from Nesbitt from the Waldorf Astoria saying, if you want to stay alive, if you want to keep your family healthy, you'll cooperate. And Brown said, is that a threat? And Nesbitt said, call it whatever you want. You know I can back it up. This is a person who has busted other people, their jobs, their inventions. He is not a nice person. And if somebody like Larry Flynt wants to be political, I would suggest, you know, that I wouldn't mess around with those people. Now he's up against the wall, and maybe by next week it'll all be over one way or the other. I don't know. This is only Monday. By the time the tapes go out, it's the weekend. But I don't think the Lauren is worth saving at all, even if he was entrapped and the other people got off, like Hetrick or these other people, Hoffman. I just would stay away from those kind of people, but I work conservatively and I want to sleep at night and I don't want to mess with people that have hurt other people. And John DeLorean has, for my money, has been a creep all of his life. And if I were going to put any time or energy and had a good platform, Larry Flynt wants to run for president and he's got a great platform. He's got good ideas and he's a really very bright person. He's enthusiastic and he's well-meaning and he's got brains. He's got quick learner like a sponge and he's got brains. But at some point, the adrenaline gets up, or I don't know what people do to get involved. And if I were going to go to bat for somebody, I went to bat for a lot of people, a lot of prisoners during the terrible years when Reagan was governor here, and Hugo Pinnell and with Louis Tackwood when he was being chased by the LAPD. And some of these people I tried to help. Elmer Davis was a victim at the time of the Watergate. He was serving 3 years in jail for an entry at Dr. Fielding's office on Bedford Drive that he never saw in his life. When I'm going to stick my neck out, and it's dangerous, and it's dangerous for a white woman to stick her neck out for black people that the police department have pegged as patsies, it's going to be for a good cause, and it's not going to be for somebody who has his own death squads. And I certainly wouldn't meet with the likes of these people, because nothing comes of it but pain and sorrow. Now, the Los Angeles Police Department is having hearings on the Black Panther, actually Daryl Gates, the head of the police department, has been charged by a law firm of O'Melveny and Myers of infiltrating the law firm and taking information from the law firm at a time in Los Angeles. This firm, it's one of the largest in the country, was representing several Black Panthers, four of them. And one of them, it turned out, because of the ACLU files, was working for the police department. He went to the lawyer and said, help me. The police are on my case. The law office helps them, and then they report back to the police department. There was a charge. O'Melveny and Meyer, one of the most prestigious law firms in Los Angeles, has accused the Los Angeles Police Department of misconduct after learning that one of their clients, purportedly a member of the Black Panther, was actually an undercover officer who used and monitored the firm's confidential discussion with the party. It's the second largest law office in the state. They agreed to represent some people, some Black Panthers, in 1977. And during the months, four members of those groups were represented by this law office. And one of them, David Bryant, was an informant for the police assigned by the Public Disorder Intelligence Division. And Bryant said that went all the way up to the top to Police Chief Daryl Gates. Bryant said he gave his intelligence to his superior reports on confidential talks between the Panther and the law office. And the law office was simply furious that they planted not a person who was in trouble with the law, but to spy on the law offices. So there's been some correspondence going down there. I mentioned because this is the law office that had a lot of protection, that thought they were representing clients and they're actually representing informants from the police department. Now, Mr. Gates denies anything's wrong with this. He says that's all right. Gates issued a statement that he acted in good faith and he knows of no breach of attorney-client relationship. Imagine you're sending a person to be represented at this law office who claims the police are after him. And he's actually sent there. The police aren't after him. He's paid by the police department to infiltrate the law office. Another whistleblower going on down L.A. right now, this Michael J. Rothmiller, was telling stories about Michael Zinzun, Z-I-N-Z-U-N. He was from the Black Gorilla family and the Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher. That's the law office of William French Smith, and also Ronald Reagan's firm. Reagan's not an attorney. He uses that law office. They're trying to discredit the case of Mr. Zinzun, that he was followed and the provocateurs of the police department infringe upon his rights. And he belongs to an organization CAPA, C-A-P-A, the Coalition Against Police Abuse. And I might have mentioned them before to you on the broadcast. Don Freed told me that when Zinzin testified for the pretrial deposition, that he mentioned Donald DeFries of the SLA, that the police department were in touch with him 1 hour before he died. Now, that brings out the whole article, book-length article that I did on the SLA is the CIA, because the same Falwell, the police agent that worked with DeFries, worked with Lewis Tackwood, making a whole cycle from the Watergate Squad 19 up to the SLA. And the purpose, again, for all this was to infiltrate groups in California, such as the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, the Chino Defense Fund, the United Farm Workers, the Black Rilla Family, the Women's Movement, target them with the COINTELPRO program, which was set up by Tom Charles Houston of Young Americans for Freedom and the government intelligence agency. So out of those pretrial depositions or hearings, we may get into the SLA case, which is an interesting part of the whole era. And Ronald Reagan as governor, hoping when they got the free food, they would get what he said is botulism he thought they deserved. Another important story on the Los Angeles Police Department files is that in Washington, D.C., the federal government is now destroying these files. The archive is going back to the McCarthy era, the Korean War, Angela Davis, Paul Robeson, and the Rosenbergs. Now, why would they be destroying those files? I think that the whole chronology of the spies coming from the Pacific, the Young Americans for Freedom, being formed by Buckley on his home in Connecticut in 1960, was just an extension of Joe McCarthy era, with Robert Morris setting up and working for the internal subcommittee and then going down to Dallas and using hitmen or bringing them in from Germany when Kennedy was killed. I'll do more on that later, but the McCarthy era has a continuity of spies from the Defense Department and from Nazi Germany working with Franco in Spain, then in the Philippines with Japanese Nazis and the Reverend Moon, and then coming back into this country and forming front organizations. And now that we, the researchers, are getting the pattern or putting together what happened to the continuity of these various people, all of a sudden in Washington, D.C., the papers are being destroyed in the archives, and they've ordered them to stop destroying this information. But it's very valuable to put together the whole era. Now, after Henry Kissinger surfaced, and I'm going to do a lot on Henry Kissinger tonight, when he surfaced again on this great committee for the President of the United States, a man who worked with him closely, Peter Drucker, also was in the news the same week. There was sort of a chronology, if you remember. Alfred Bloomingdale died first, and Vicky Morgan was dead. Roy Cohn moved to Washington. Larry McDonald was dead. These people all part of the Roy Cohn, Henry Kissinger, Fritz Kramer network. The 007 was shot down with Larry McDonald, whose Western Goals was linked to the police department that ties into Ronald Reagan's governorship. And William Casey got a quick award at the CIA. And while Henry Kissinger was having his mugshot in every newspaper on this new commission the president appointed, out of the woodwork came Mr. Drucker, Peter Drucker, D-R-U-C-K-E-R. He's not a household word for many of you. Maybe you don't know the name, but I've mentioned the history of Drucker. He came over from Frankfurt, Germany, was part of the milieu of Fritz Kramer, who runs Henry Kissinger, and he became the head of the multinational corporation, the idea that corporations are bigger than nations, and run the White House and give directions to the president and combine and swallow up little businesses. And just the week that Henry Kissinger was really swinging, by September the 15th, Kissinger had his appointment. September the 25th, Drucker's in London, in the London Times and London Observer, with an article, The Guru of Management. And I'll give you a few sentences of it. It says, it's almost inconceivable to emerge from business school these days without knowing something, probably a great deal, about Peter Drucker. He so dominated management studies with his 20 books that when he flies into London this time, he has a novel with him, and this isn't about corporations. He uses the German-American accent, the trademark of instant authority in all matters from psychiatry to physics to Henry Kissinger, and if Henry Kissinger counts, diplomacy. Drucker is both charming and sharp. He's advised the mighty corporations from General Motors down, or you might say from General Motors up, and he's a professor of Oriental art and down in Claremont, California, where he lives. And he's a novelist. His daughter said when his new book came out, they were dismayed to find his father knew about sex. Well, if you know Henry Kissinger and Alfred Bloomingdale and Vicky Morgan, you know about sex. His daughters ought to catch on to that. Back in 1971, he was stomping the world, extolling the virtues of giant multinational corporations. Now his prime role is to tone down the big corporations, build your system of organized abandonment is important, he says. He's telling them organized abandonment. That's what Adolf Hitler used just when the war was kind of winding down in 1943 to reorganize in other places. He's giving opinions for corporations on jobs, but the important thing is that his picture really hasn't been in any newspapers that I've seen, or his name hasn't been thrown around. And then 10 days after Kissinger is back traveling in Central America, Drucker is in London, and Kissinger has a business in London. It's multinational. But Drucker was in the news, and I thought that was maybe it was coincidental. I don't know. I do believe Drucker's responsible for bringing Fritz Kramer to this country and Fritz Kramer for bringing Henry Kissinger. And I do believe that the biggest single problem in the United States is Kissinger, Kramer, and Daniel Graham. Incidentally, the book Forces of Power that I've referred to many times by William Taub has a quotation about Henry Kissinger I might have put on the air or not by Le Doc Tho, T-H-O, out of North Vietnam. And in this book, he had explained to Mr. Taub that Henry Kissinger had arranged to destroy everything that had been done in North Vietnam, that they didn't want communism. They wanted a country that would get alone on its own resources. And he said Kissinger was referred to as a Nazi in his handling of world events. And that's the first time I've seen that in print, that he acts like a German. Now, Kissinger's face is everywhere lately. As I said before, they're trying to get a thing to run him for president. There's a news story out of New York, a social column. Forget Brooke Shields, Liz Taylor, and the dancing feet of 42nd Street. Henry Kissinger is riding the crest of a new I Love New York wave. They're having a popular advertising campaign, and the East Siders can see Henry Kissinger's face. It will be switched on with I Love New York. So he's on the billboards, that ugly face, who really should be exposed like Mussolini, but he is on the billboards. The Soviet Union had a story, a picture of Henry Kissinger there, reminding people, this came out of New Times just about 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. It says, who says the fame is not a saleable commodity when it costs too much and it doesn't keep? The example of some U.S. luminaries proves the contrary. Suffice it to say that Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State, former President of National Security, and his aide, Brent Scowcroft, S-C-O-W, Scowcroft, and ex-CIA Director Richard Helms, and William Colby, all of them are consultants in United States foreign firms, and the article says that they go on and they're reaping in the money. Kissinger and his consulting firm called Kissinger Associates Incorporated advises on anyone who wants to be relieved of money pouring in to various countries and wants to rely upon it. There's no shortage of clients. He services 12 transnational corporations, the former Secretary of State, and now he's on this new bipartisan committee, and they call it the big guns. Kissinger returns to the U.S. as the U.S. ships head for Nicaragua. And this article from New Times said that it might be good to look into what he did in Chile, the Middle East, Africa, Cambodia, and so forth. The Washington Times, D.C. Times, tells about a dinner party in Washington, D.C. that Henry Kissinger attended. Remember out at, in Northern California when they had the reunion of the greatest blackmailing. One article on the greatest blackmailing of all, the Bohemian Grove, and they played Hail to the Chief the year before last. Well, there was a party in Washington, D.C., and Henry Kissinger pointed the needling of Jesse Helms, who, and it tells how he almost stole the show, and he said, I never dreamed as a boy that there would be a time when I would address a dinner like this, not only because the President of the United States is here, because so many of his successors are here. I never heard it said before that I have the qualities to be President of the United States. I have said it myself. In fact, that's probably where I heard it. I may be the only person in this room who's barred by the Constitution by reason of birth from being President of the United States. It's not true, however, that this was the original Helms Amendment. They're trying to put in an amendment to make Henry Kissinger President of the United States. And another story, Henry Kissinger takes his mission to Latin America, and the diplomats said it's going to be another flying circus. And then a party in Denver, Colorado, that his friend Davis gave. And the first thing in the social column written in Los Angeles Herald, Denver, Henry Kissinger and Joan Collins are deep deep in a tete-a-tete. He's near on the dais is the 38th president of the United States, Gerald Ford, who was appointed by crook Nixon. And Marvin Davis is having a party. The article is written by my cousin's daughter for the Los Angeles Herald Social Column. And the very first name there, the Davis's big bash, Henry Kissinger. He's making all the social columns, and he is on the billboards in New York. And they're trying to pass him off for all the world like the future president of the United States. And if we don't stop that, it just may happen. Look at all the other calamities that took place. We'll take a one-minute break now and then get back to Henry Kissinger and what Henry Gonzalez said at Congress. It's really important to know that they are pushing this man, and when there's something against him, like the before the Congress, when the president has appointed Kissinger to this staff, and a congressman gives a speech about him, a long speech, a half-hour speech, which I'll reduce to about 15 or 20 minutes, the essence of the speech, I didn't see it in any of the newspapers. And whoever sent it to me, I appreciate it. People that take world watches or listen, I appreciate your sending me these things because they're things that I don't get. Don't assume that I have these items. Send me whatever you think I would use, and I'll let you know if I have it or not. I didn't have this, and I appreciate whoever sent it.